Hello, and welcome to the TAA Audio Conference, Tips on Getting an Academic Book Published, an interview with Rachel Tour. Rachel Tour is an Associate Professor of Creative Writing in the MFA program at Eastern Washington University and a former Acquisitions Editor at Oxford and Duke University Presses. A cum laude graduate of Yale University with an MFA from the University of Montana, she is the author of three books, Admissions Confidential, An Insider's Account of the Elite College Selection Process, The Pagan Eye, and Personal Record, A Love Affair with Running. She also writes a monthly column on issues in writing and publishing for the Chronicle of Higher Education. So, Rachel, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure,
Kim. With all the possible journals available, how can authors determine where to send a manuscript?
Okay, so first I want to say that mostly what I'm going to be talking about is book publishing. And my experience, I've been on both sides of the desk as an editor and as an author now. And since I left publishing, the landscape has changed pretty dramatically, especially for university presses. So funding is getting cut, presses are being closed down. Digital publishing has changed a lot of the landscape of publishing. But what hasn't changed is the interaction between the author and the editor. So what I want to do is hopefully give people some tips about how to approach an editor, how to think about getting published, and then what comes after that is, you have to really think about what your goals are for publication. And so I think for many people, the first goal is, I just want to get published, and that's understandable. But in order to be published well, I think you have to think beyond that and figure out, do you want to get published? Do you want an academic monograph published so that you can get tenure? Do you want information readily available to the largest number of people possible? Do you want to get money? So there are a lot of considerations that go into where you submit a manuscript, and it's beyond just, I want to get a contract. And I know authors can get itchy about wanting a contract, and so sometimes they don't think beyond that first step. I think it's important to remember that this is a long process. In terms of where authors should think about submitting a manuscript, one of the things that I realize now as an author is that you have to treat the publishing part as a job. And that means you have to do a lot of research in thinking about what would be a good fit for your manuscript. And so one of the ways that publishing works is by categories. And so many presses publish only in certain areas. And the Association of American University Presses publishes a guide that lists all the presses and what areas they publish in. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that, whatever press you think you might be interested in publishes in your area. One of the things that makes me really concerned is when somebody says, oh, there's never been a book like this published before. It's unlike anything that's ever been done. And I think, uh-oh, you're not going to get published because publishers don't want to hear that. They want to hear it's like this book, and then they know how to reach that audience. So the first step for an academic author is really to figure out, whose company do you want to be in? And where in a bookstore would your book go? So the way to do that, I think the first step is to look at your own bookshelf and see who's publishing the books that you've used to do your own research. One of the easiest ways to accomplish this kind of work is to go to a conference in whatever field you're publishing in and see which publishers show up and walk around the book exhibit and get a sense of, who's published books that are similar to yours. Maybe not in treatment, certainly not in argument, but at least in general topic. So that's really, that's really essential. Also, talking to people looking at your own bibliography, for one, even if you're not just looking at your bookshelf, looking at your bibliography, and then talking to people in the field and finding out about their experiences. You can ask about, what was it like to work not only with a particular press, but with a particular editor. And people are generally pretty willing to talk about this stuff. So So yeah, so that's, you know, basically I would say, like, make sure that you do research in the area.
Once you've decided where to send your manuscript, what is the best way to approach the publisher?
Okay, well, I mean, the first thing to understand is that editors are, if you meet an editor at a conference, say, and you describe what your project is, and it falls within the area in which she publishes, she's pretty much always going to say, oh, that sounds really interesting, send it to me. So I've had experience with authors who say, oh, yeah, well, I have, you know, an expression of interest from a publisher. And, you know, like, what do you mean? And they tell me, oh, I met her at a conference, and she said, that sounds interesting, send it to me. To me, that's not an expression of interest. That's a reflexive response from an editor. These editors are characterologically interested. You know, they don't want to miss out on anything. And so, and usually when people describe their projects, they make them sound pretty good. So the first thing is, you know, just meeting an editor and saying, here's what I've got, and having her say, oh, that sounds good, send it to me. That's a good start, but you can't really rely on that as any kind of indicator of true interest, because it'll all come out once you get to the manuscript. Once she gets to the manuscript, then they'll really, you know, how did you do what you said you did? That determines whether or not she's going to want to publish it. So the first thing to do is find the name of the editor at the press. What you don't want to do is send a manuscript in with a Dear Editor letter. You want to track down the name of the editor, and that's very easy to do. You know, every press has a website that lists the names of the editor and their field and their contact information. So the first thing you want to do is find the name of the editor, and then write her a letter. But before you do that, before you even think about approaching an editor, I think there's some really important questions that people need to be able to answer. And, you know, some of them are going to sound really obvious, but you have to know, like, what's your topic? And then beyond that, what's the argument? And so, you know, a description of the book really has to include an answer to the question, so what? You know, say you've looked at this, you know, set of data, or you've looked at this, you know, area of the world, or you've looked at this group of people, so what? You know, why should the editor or any reader care about it? So you have to be able to articulate that for yourself. You know, why should we care? You also have to be able to make a good argument for why you were the person to write this particular book. I mean, that might be because it was your dissertation research, but the publisher's going to look for what's your expertise. You also have to know who will read it, and what that really translates to is who will buy it. So I think one of the things that happens with academic research is that we often get really interested in our topics, and we forget that other people might not be as interested in them. So you have to be able to write knowing that there will be a readership for your book. And then, you know, when you narrow down your list of publishers, you know, why this publisher? You know, and if it's because you think their books are really pretty, you know, like, wow, those jackets really stand out, that can be one reason, but it's not a good enough reason if they don't publish in your field. So you have to be able to think about, when you approach a publisher, where does this fit on their list? What other books have they published that they can promote your book with? Then, you know, finally, you know, why is now the right time to publish this book? And for academic books, you know, often there's not a timeliness factor. But if there is, that's something that a publisher would want to know.
What should you include in the cover letter that accompanies your book proposal? What are the elements that should be included in that letter?
Okay, yeah. Well, the first thing is, and I've been thinking a lot about this recently, and, you know, and academic books are mostly not agented. So you don't need an agent to place a book with the university press. But what I realized is that one of the things that agents do for authors is they help them create a submission packet. And that consists of a whole bunch of things, which I'll explain in a little bit. But it's really important, I think, to realize that what you want to do once you figure out, like, who you want to publish your book, you know, which editor at which press, is make it really easy for her to say yes. So you want to do everything you can to make her job easier. So for the cover letter, I think, you know, it's really important to be able to boil down the description of your book to a very one really good brief paragraph. And that's kind of what I call the elevator pitch, like in Hollywood, where if you get on the elevator at the lobby of the, you know, the Paramount building, and you're there with a producer, and you have until the 32nd floor to explain what your idea is, you got to get that pitch exactly right. And this is something that's very hard for academics to do because, you know, we're trying to look at things in the most complex and nuanced way possible. And you don't want to boil it down to something that's, this is, you know, Pride and Prejudice meets Jaws. You know, that's not going to work for an academic book. But you do have to be able to say, what's the topic? What are you looking at? What's the argument? And why is it important? And you need to be able to do that in a good, strong paragraph. So it's what's the book? Then you need to be able to say what your qualifications are to write the book. And you'll be including your CV in the submissions packet, but you can't assume that anybody's actually going to read it carefully. So as you would with a job letter, what you want to do is point to the things, the items on your CV that are relevant and important for the editor to know. So a little bit about why you're the right person to write the book. Academic manuscripts at University Press almost always go out for peer review. And so, again, to make the editor's job easier, you might suggest possible reviewers. And it's a really good idea if you can suggest people who have been published by that press. Because, you know, editors, you know, we all work with networks, and, you know, often we go to people who are our friends and our colleagues, our authors, and say, hey, will you read this manuscript for me? So if there are people you don't know but whose input you would love on your manuscript, it's a great idea to say, you know, here are some you know, some people who might make for good reviewers. And then you want to let her know what you have available. So do you have a proposal? Do you have a complete manuscript? And when you expect to have a complete and final manuscript. You want to tell her something about what the manuscript is like, the length and the complexity. So is it, you know, 350 manuscript pages of straight text? Is there tons of artwork? What are you going to do about getting permissions for the artwork? Are there tables that are going to have to be created? Are there maps? So just something about what the manuscript is going to eventually look like. And then finally, at the end of the cover letter, don't forget that you're asking a question. What you're asking is, you know, is this something you would like to consider? You know, may I send you the manuscript? Authors often forget that when they're submitting, they're actually asking for consideration. So those are the main things that are really important for the cover letter. The brief description, why you're the person to write the book, suggestions of reviewers, what you have available and what it looks like, and finally, would you be willing to consider the manuscript?
You mentioned an agent. Is it important for academic book authors to consult with an attorney at all in negotiating a contract in case the book does take off and they want to make some money on it?
I think, I mean, the thing about academic publishing is it's pretty unmediated relationship between the author and the editor. And you know, 99% of the time, it's actually a really good relationship, and the editors look out for the best interests of the author. I mean, it's a very nice and collegial industry. When an editor sends an author a contract, it's a boilerplate contract, and it's written in such a way that the author is not likely to get screwed. It's very straightforward. The terms, there are very few terms that are negotiable. And so I don't feel like it's ever necessary to have an attorney vet a contract, because there's so little that can be changed. I mean, you know, if she says, I'll give you 10 free author's copies, can you ask for 15? Sure, you can ask for 15, and if she feels like she can do that, you know, that's fine. Usually with academic books, there are not any, there's usually minimal, if any, advance against royalties. You know, one of the things authors can do, if you think, you know, this really could be, this could be a bestseller, and most authors, you know, have perhaps unrealistic expectations about the size of the market for their book. So if you think it's going to be a bestseller, you're, you know, like every other author, what you can do is have escalation points. So, you know, if there are, you know, if you have a royalty rate for the first, you know, 5,000 copies, you can escalate, you can ask for it to be escalated after that. So if it really takes off, you know, you're gonna see more profit. That's rare, and most publishers are willing to do it because, you know, it's in their interest for the book to do well. On the other side of that is some presses, especially university presses, have been asking for subventions to help underwrite the cost of the book. And the publication decision is especially at university presses, not contingent on being able to, you know, cough up some cash to help pay for the cost of the book. What it does is it directly affects the price of the book. So if you can get money from the university, that can really help in lowering the cost of the book. And, you know, TAA, as I think hopefully most members are aware, can help offer subvention for the publication of books. Members can apply for subvention grants. But I don't really think for academic publishing anybody needs an agent or an attorney. I mean, I think the one thing that, and agents are going to be unlikely to take on academic books unless they have real trade potential, because they work off of a percentage of the proceeds, and, you know, 15% of nothing is nothing. So there's not a big monetary interest in it for them. One thing an agent can do, and I think this is the most important work I think that agents do now, and that many academics would benefit from it, all of us benefit from this, is get help on creating the submission packet. And I think that's really, you know, one of the workshops that I've developed is trying to, you know, talk to academics about what goes into a good submission packet. That's really the work that agents do. That's the kind of thing that most of us don't understand how to do a really good job that's included in it. And so, you know, I'm trying to help people get the tools and the skills they need to understand how manuscripts are evaluated so that they can present a strong submission packet.
Can you outline the elements of a good book proposal?
Yeah.
What should they include in it?
Yeah. Okay. So this is very standard. It's a very standard set of things. But it's really important to understand how each component works. So briefly, the components are the cover letter, which I've already talked about, the overview, which is the hardest thing to do well. That's really the key that I spend a lot of time talking about. How do you do a good overview? Because it's not an abstract, it's something different. A section on the competition, or for an academic book, it's not so much competition, but what other books is this book in conversation with. A section about the market, which is really essential because increasingly it's up to authors to do the marketing for the book. A section about the author and that will that and also the CV will be attached to that, a table of contents, and a sample chapter. And so that's what a good proposal includes: letter, overview, competition, market, author, table of contents, sample chapter. And each of those are discrete writing tasks, and this is a genre that's unfamiliar. I think the hardest writing task is in the overview. And the overview isn't, as I said, it's not just an abstract. Really, what I've come to think recently as I've been enjoying the current season of The Bachelorette is, the reality series where there's, one woman and 25 guys vying for her attention. I realized, hey, that's a lot like what it's like to be an editor. Because, and I think if you realize that when you're submitting, it's going to help you. I mean, it sounds preposterous and shows that I have extremely bad taste in television. But, I mean, here's the thing. There's one bachelorette, and, she's a hot commodity. And then there's a screening process where you end up with 25 candidates who all look on the surface like they could be pretty good matches. So there's an abundance of riches. And so you're all vying for the attention of this one person. And she has a lot of choice. And what that means is if there are a lot of good candidates, there's a lot of room for, taste and personal bias. And, one of the things to say about editors is, a good editor is somebody who has good taste. So I think understanding that you're competing with a whole bunch of other projects for her attention, and you've got to do something to seduce her into being interested in your book, that's the way to approach writing the overview. The overview is really an act of seduction. So if you just start trotting out your research findings, that's not going to do anything to bring her in. So often a good overview will be a narrative. It'll tell a story. How did you get interested in the project? What did you find surprising about it? Because editors always like to learn things and to be surprised. In an overview, you use your juiciest stuff first. So you don't hold back on anything like, oh, I'm not going to tell her that right away because, that's really the good stuff. You bring the good stuff right up front. You make the writing lively. This is really an act of getting somebody interested in you. And you remember that your audience is one busy editor who's got a gazillion other projects on her desk. So what you really want to do is say, hey, look at me. I'm really interesting. And finally, what you really want to do in the overview section is write a paragraph that she can just pick up and cut and paste and use as copy. So you want that fantastic elevator description that's, one short paragraph that says everything anybody needs to know about the book. Because she's going to have to present it to the marketing folks and to the other editorial people. And so instead of having her write a paragraph, you've written her the best paragraph that could possibly be used to describe the book. So the overview is something that it's more like writing an essay about the book than pulling out excerpts from the book. The competition section is, I guess what I should say is I had this giant epiphany when I was preparing to give a talk on writing a book proposal at a university that I realized, the best way to write a book proposal is to start at the very end of the process. So when your book goes into production and you think, I'm finally finished, I've read the copyright manuscript, I don't need to do any more work, the press sends you a marketing questionnaire or an author's questionnaire. And it's a pain in the butt to fill out because they ask you all these really hard questions like, describe your book in one brief paragraph. And what I realized, this is my giant realization, is, hey, the way to write a good book proposal or the way to pitch a manuscript to an editor is to start at the end and fill out the author's questionnaire. So you can go to, most presses have on their website a version of their author's questionnaire, and they're all pretty much the same, so it doesn't matter. Even if the press is submitting, if it doesn't have one, you can find one from somebody else. And so being able to answer those questions before you submit the manuscript will not only make it more likely for the editor to be interested and make her job easier, it can also help you as you're writing a book. So for the competition section, this is a part of the author's questionnaire. And here's, this is from, I'll just read off from one of the author's questionnaires I found. Please list the nearest rivals to your book. Please comment on the strengths and weaknesses of each book. In what distinctive ways is your book stronger? Which comparative features of your book should be highlighted? They're all going to ask something like that. And my advice is to authors is to write a bibliographic essay. And instead of just listing the books and their publishers, which you need to be able to do, do it in the context of an prose description that says, here's what this book does, mine is different because I do this. Or mine is a good complement to this book because it could be used in the same courses, but it goes farther, or it's going to be more accessible. So the competition section is really, it should be something that's easy to write because you know which book you've been using to do the research. The market section, this all can come from the author's questionnaire. So it'll ask you, which journals are likely to review your book? Which conferences should we send your book to? What are the websites or the blogs, that might be interested in your work? So it's a whole bunch of very extensive questions, which if you can answer them all, when you go back to write a section about what the market for the book is, you'll not only be able to identify the market, but you'll also be able to help the publisher know how to reach that market. And that's really essential. And again, it makes the book that much more appealing. The author section, you want to ask, you want to answer, why are you the person to write this book? You're going to highlight important items on your CV, mention previously published books. If you can and they're good, you can include sales figures, reviews, publicity. Mention articles that you published on this topic, and then also mention your connection to organizations that have an interest in this area. So if you're the, secretary of the national organization in your field, that's something that will be useful for the publisher to know. The next component, the table of contents, this isn't really just a table of contents. For a good proposal, it should be annotated. And so what you would do is have one or two paragraphs of summary for each chapter. So first you would describe what you cover in the chapter, and then you would describe what the argument is of each chapter and how it fits into the main argument of the book. And here, titles can be important because it can basically be, kind of a roadmap for how you're going to develop your argument. And then for a proposal, you're going to want to include a sample chapter or two sample chapters. And again, it's not necessarily a real chapter, but it's whatever is your strongest material. So it's going to be a way to show how you're treating this topic, and you'll want to write it in a way that the rest of the book will be written, unlike with the overview, but better. So the writing really has to be strong. So it's your strongest, juiciest, best chapter. That may be the introduction, but it also really may not be. It may be some chapter farther into the book. And if you do a good job in the annotated table of contents, it'll be clear to the editor, how that fits in. So those are the components, And as I said, they're fairly straightforward. The letter, the overview, which is really this kind of narrative account that will get the editor interested in you and your work. The competition, the market, the author, the table of contents, and the sample chapter. And, what I've really come to believe as I've been thinking about this more and more and actually working on my own book proposal is I think for academic books, even if you've finished the manuscript, or perhaps especially if you've finished the manuscript, I think doing all of this, what seems like extra work, to create the submission packet that can go with the manuscript. You can do all this stuff and send it in with a completed manuscript. So instead of sending a sample chapter, you would include the complete draft of the manuscript. I think that would only be to the benefit of authors, and it would make the jobs of editors that much easier, and therefore make it easier for them to say yes. So it's a lot of work, and it's really hard to do. But I think that ultimately it's well worth an author's time to create a strong submission packet.
You talked about the market. What do authors need to know about marketing academic books? What are their responsibilities for marketing their book?
They need to know that they are responsible for marketing the book. The press will do lots of things to support the marketing, but it really has to be driven by the author. So you have to know, and frankly, as an author, I find this icky. Like, I don't want to think about the market. I just want to write the book I want to write. That is a very bad strategy. That is not something that anybody should ever do. What you have to do is realize that, okay, who's going to be interested in this book? And then you have to figure out how to get it to them. So, you know, do you have a website? Do you use social media? Do you go to conferences? Do you give talks? If it's a book that can be used in courses, what are they? And so I think, you know, the textbook people know this really well, that you have to do a lot of market research to figure out exactly which schools are using books and in what courses and what the enrollments are. I think for academic books, it's really in an author's interest to figure out, if it's just in the upper level courses, what are they? Are they being taught at different universities? How are you going to get it to readers? And, you know, one of the things that I think is happening is that the academic monograph is, if it's not dead, it's dying. And so the days when, you know, you could afford to publish a book that sold 750 copies are kind of over. So you have to be aware of this when you're writing, because if you only write to people within your sub field and you use language that keeps everybody out, everybody who's not trained in that specific field out, you're really limiting the market. And so one of my big things that I complain about pretty much every month in the Chronicle of Higher Education is how academic writing tends to keep readers out instead of inviting them in. So I think it's really in people's interest to care about their sentences, not to use jargon, to be clear, and to write with, and I'm not saying at all to dumb down the content at all. I think, you know, it's really important to be able to do specialized work, but I think you can do it in a way that allows people to understand what you're doing.
What is a reasonable amount of time to hear back from the editor once you've submitted a proposal? Can you be too pushy in trying to communicate with an editor after a manuscript has been submitted?
Yes, you can be too pushy, but if you're too nice, then you can be inadvertently ignored. So what I always told authors, if they hadn't heard from me in what they thought was a reasonable amount of time, to bug me. And to bug me, really that meant just a little, you know, a quick note, you know, hey, you know, wondering if, you know, you can let me know when you're going to have a decision. Because a lot of times what happens for editors is that stuff just piles up. I mean, literally piles and piles and piles on a desk. And, you know, things at the bottom, you know, can get ignored. And once you remember that there's somebody waiting to hear from you, I mean, editors are very nice, kind, generous people who are also incredibly busy and overworked and harried. And so if you are nice and say, hey, you know, just wondering, that's gonna spur her into action. Daily annoying phone calls will not make you beloved by the editor. One thing that I love to remind people is be really nice to the editorial assistant. They're almost always, overeducated, super high achieving secretaries. And so, many of us started at the bottom. And those people often go on to become editors. But they're also really excited to have contact with authors, and they're eager to please. And so if you can get the editorial assistant on your side and let her nag the editor for you, so if you can, if you can establish a relationship where you say, hey, you think, I'm going to hear anything soon, and you have somebody on your side. And having said that, I would say also it's important to be nice to everybody at the press at every stage. And there was always this kind of crazy thing that happened where if an author was, particularly awful or a pain in the butt, bad things would happen to the book. Like, oops, the cover, would have the author's name misspelled, or, the truck that was driving the, bound copies would, get into a wreck, and oops, there were no more copies. And I'm not saying this is intentional in any way, but it just always seems to be the not nice people whose books had problems. Remember, people go into publishing because they love books. They love working with the authors. And everybody's harried and overworked. But I think nobody minds a polite inquiry. Hey, just wondering what's going on. How long can it take? It can take, if you wait 3 months, if you haven't heard anything in 3 months, I would say you want to check in. There are people who've waited a year or 18 months before hearing anything, and that's not good for anyone. To get to the editor's attention, it can take a really long time. It's hard to gauge, but I would like to think that authors are empowered to check in and ask, and that can speed up the process.
Thank you, Rachel. Several participants submitted some questions when they registered, so I want to switch over to asking some of their questions. One question is, what issues have you encountered with regard to publishing books in digital form? What value does a publisher add over simply self-publishing on Amazon?
That is a gigantic question. And I'm not necessarily the most qualified to answer it. I can give you my opinion. I think the value added by a publisher is has a lot to do with what I started out by saying, which is, what do you want to get out of a publication? What's important to you beyond just having the work available? So if it's just having it be available, and you can do all of the social media and marketing to get people aware of it, great, go for it. Is that going to get you tenure? Probably not. So I think, what a publisher does is a publisher vets the process, and so university presses use peer review, and that's just sort of the industry standard for academia, is that, books are peer reviewed. How much editorial work goes in? You can hire your own copy editor. Usually university press editors are not doing a ton of editorial work, although there are certainly plenty who do. So will you get a better book if you publish with a mainstream publisher? Possibly. I think a lot has to do, and this is a giant question about the changing landscape of academic publishing, is, do you need peer review for some reason? Will people take it more seriously if it comes with the imprint of a university press?
See, another participant asks, what advice do you have for a graduate student wanting to publish? What may be some good journals to consider for a graduate student? Is it different?
Well, I mean, again, I don't really feel like I can speak to journal publishing. I think one of the things that we talk about a lot with book publishing is how much should you publish, how much of the book should you publish before you submit it to a press. So if you have, 7 chapters and you've already published 5 of them in journals, it's going to be a lot less appealing as a book project. I think graduate students can often, it's good experience to publish parts of their work before they try and submit it to a press. And again, how do you decide where to publish? And I think that's something that they need to discuss with their advisors or with other people in the field. Where they submit, is really, the question to ask yourself is, what do you want beyond simply getting a publication? It's who's going to be reading your work. What's it going to do for you in terms of filling out your CV? Is it going to look like, is it going to look like actually making your CV more solid, or is it going to look like, prepping it up with fluff? And so I think it's important to write with an eye toward publication. But graduate students, for their dissertations, they have a very small audience that they have to please, 3 to 5 people. And writing for a journal or, submitting a book proposal, you've got to be able to reach a lot more than 5 people. So I think it's good practice to think about publishing. I also think it's important to get the work done. So for graduate students, I think there's always a balance between, how much time do you want to spend getting one article out versus if you spend all that time working on one article, how much are you going to be set back trying to finish your dissertation?
This is a question from another participant. I have a book underway, and one publisher contacted me to meet at an academic conference where I was presenting on part of the research that makes up the book. We met, and they're interested, but they conceived a book based on just the aspect I presented at that conference. I had pitched a larger, different book to them, but I must complete the book, and I have not published a book before. Should I discuss the larger, different book or focus on the book they're interested in?
I mean, I think that for an academic book, you don't want to let anybody else tell you what to do. I think it has to be your book. I think it's really important to listen to what other people are saying. This to me seems like an unusual situation where an editor wants a more narrowly focused book than what the author wants to write, and it usually goes the other way. Usually editors want bigger books that are going to be broader and get a broader readership. So without knowing the specifics, I would say that that's the kind of expression of interest that I was talking about at the beginning, where it's not really based on seeing the work. It's based on seeing a small portion, and I would be very hesitant to do that kind of work without a really firm commitment. What I call an expression of interest is a contract. I mean, to me, anything less than a contract is a conversation. And I'm not going to do any work based on a conversation. What I might do is I would put together a proposal in the ways that I've outlined to talk about, to show exactly what book you want to write. And then the editor will either be interested in, give you contract or not, but then you can send it out to other people. I think one of the great things about talking to editors, is that it can be really intellectually stimulating, and they can have great ideas just off the top of their head for what you might be able to do. But that's really different from working with a manuscript. And so I would be reluctant to do much work toward revising to something specific that somebody says in a conversation before I had a contract.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. I think we'll take some questions, some live questions now. So if you have a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad, and it'll put you into the question queue. All right. Shauna, you have a question for Rachel today?
Yes. Most academic press contracts that I've looked at, the boilerplate contracts, demand all future digital rights. Is that a good idea? Is there any way to withhold those rights if you're a first-time author? Can you get out of giving them away?
You know, that is that's an excellent question. And I'm not the right person to answer this question. I think that there are a lot of people at TA who are good resources for this. And one of the things, I think that's coming up a lot. And I don't know how tightly publishers are holding on to those rights. My guess is, you know, pretty tightly. And so I think that's an excellent point of negotiation. And frankly, I don't know the answer. Maybe there's somebody who's listening who can call in, who knows better than I. But I mean, it used to be things like, you know, we would give up movie rights because it was so unlikely that it would ever happen. Digital rights is, you know, a different level of thing. So I think that's an important point. I don't know the answer. Maybe somebody can call in who knows better than I.
Okay. Shauna, we can post your question out to a couple of contacts that I think could answer that. So we'll do that after the call in and get some answers for you. Thank you. All right. Anyone else have a question? All right. Carol, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. My question has to deal with, you know, we've published in some areas, even published a textbook, and now we want to publish in a different area. How do we make that transition if our CV doesn't seem to be quite strong enough? What are some things you would suggest, or maybe dead giveaways that would, you know, make an editor turn the other way?
For an academic book or for a trade book?
Yes, for an academic book. Once we've come out of the other and trying to kind of reposition ourselves, how do you not look like, you know, like you don't know what you're doing? What are some things you can do to strengthen for the field in which you're?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great thing about academic publishing. It's different from trade publishing. It's that really it'll rise and fall on the strength of the work. You know, so I think if you do the work and say, you know, I've had success with different kinds of publishing, so the editor knows that you know how to put together a book, and then it's really going to be about, okay, if this is a new field for you, you know, make sure that you can show that you're on top of the field, that you know what the important books are, you know, who the important people are. I think suggesting as reviewers, people who are well established in the field, and so that if your work is solid, it won't matter if it's a new field for you, as long as you can show that you know that you're entering a field that you know something about and that you can make a substantial contribution to. I think that and that's, you know, that is a beautiful thing that people, you know, in academia, we're so fortunate that we get to skip around and learn whole new areas and do different things. We don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, which is what, you know, the trade publishers are often looking at, you know, your track record and, you know, the people who bought you before. So I don't think that's a big concern, as long as you can show that you can make a solid contribution to the new field.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Again, if you have any questions, press 1 on your phone keypad to put yourself into the question queue. We have another question. If this is just another situational one, he is asking if he has 2 chapters of 7 planned done, doesn't want to get a contract so early for fear of not having enough time to finish by a too early deadline. So he wants to work on it in spring 2014. That's when he'll have it finished. So is there a logic to sending off as sample chapters only 1/3 of what you've actually completed at time of making the proposal so that you can obtain a contract based on those 2 chapters when you might actually be a little bit further along than that? Is there any reason for doing that. It just wants to you know, be working on other things at the same time and not be tied down with a short deadline on a particular piece that he's working on.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to understand is that the deadlines in academic contracts usually don't mean that much. You know, the editor is not going to be sitting there, you know, looking at her watch saying, oh, where is that book? Where is that book? I mean, I've given contracts to people 20 years ago where the book still isn't done, but I think it will get done eventually. So I think that, you know, what you don't want to feel going in is that the editor is telling you when you have to finish by. That's unreasonable. So the next question is, you know, what would having an advanced contract do for you? So for some people, the security of knowing that, you know, if you put together those two good chapters and write a proposal, you know, create the submission packet that I've described, it's entirely possible that you could get a contract. What will that do for you? Will that help you in any way? For some people, psychologically, it helps to know, I'm going to get this finished and it's going to have a home when I finish it eventually. What it does is it ties the author to the publisher so that you can't, once you have that contract from the publisher, you can't send it anywhere else. What it doesn't do is it doesn't really bind the publisher to the author, because that contract is going to have a phrase that says, you know, publication on delivery of an acceptable manuscript. So the manuscript will still have to go through a review process, and the publisher will be, you know, committed to helping it get through, but it doesn't necessarily mean it will be published. It'll still have to go through through peer review and the press's internal process. So, you know, for some people, you know, it really depends on what you hope to get after publication. So, you know, does an advanced contract count towards, say, tenure and promotion? In many places, it doesn't. You know, for tenure, in many places, what counts is if the book is in page proof. You know, for some, it's whether, you know, if it's been copy edited. You know, there are places that might say, you know, an advanced contract is meaningful. But I think, you know, in this case, if he feels that, you know, he's working at a pace that seems right to him and he has other things he wants to do, doesn't want the pressure of a deadline, you know, what good would it do to have an advanced contract? I mean, to me, I've never done a book without an advanced contract because I want help. I want help at least to have somebody where I can say, oh, you know what, like, I'm going to have this to you in, you know, 6 months. That helps me knowing that I know where once I get something finished, I know where I'm going to send it. It's a big boost for me psychologically to feel like there's somebody on my side. Because, you know, writing is so horrible and lonely and painful. You just want somebody to say, hey, go, girl. You know, good job. You got a chapter done. And most editors are more than happy to do that. So I think it's really parsing out, you know, what's important is the most essential thing and what it's going to do for you. I don't think, you know, a rush to getting a contract is necessarily a good thing for everybody. And especially if it's going to make you feel pressured to meet a deadline, you know, but editors rely on the authors to put the delivery date in the manuscript. So if you say, you know, I'm not going to have it until 2016, I think that's going to be fine with most editors.
Okay, we have a couple more questions. Todd, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for doing this for us. I've learned a great deal from it. And my question, you may have addressed this, and I apologize if you have because I missed the first 10 minutes, but should one send out a manuscript or send a proposal to more than one editor?
Oh, no, I didn't address that, but that's a great question. I would check to make sure that the press accepts multiple submissions. And it's a really easy question. You know, do you accept multiple submissions? Most presses are going to say, yes, I think, at this point. And, you know, to me, because the process can take so long. You don't want to, if they all accept multiple submissions, you don't want to wait, 6 to 18 months to hear back and then have to start all over someplace else. And I think if presses are getting reviews, then they may be less likely to accept multiple submissions because that's an investment on their part. But I think that's the kind of question you absolutely ask as soon as you contact the editor. Will you accept multiple submissions? And I think most of them will say yes.
Great. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you. All right, Trish.
Hey.
Go ahead.
My name is Trish. Again, I'd like to thank you for providing this seminar to us. I'm wondering, after everything that you've said, what the real advantage would be to the author when we've got to find out who the market is, and we've got to suggest who the market is, and we've got to write the manuscript, and we've got to do all this. What's the advantage of going to a publisher? Do you see any?
I mean, for me, the advantage is it's the stamp. I mean, to me, that's a big advantage. It's gone through a process. It's been vetted, and I'm old-fashioned that way, I think, because that still means something to me. That it means that it's not just me, writing for myself and putting it out there. This has been approved at various levels. And to me, at a university, that's important because that's that's how my career is going to be evaluated by,
That it would be, for example, we self-publish all of our stuff, and we've gotten 2 awards through Independent Book Publishers Association and TAA. Do you think that would be a similar stamp?
I think whatever works for you, given the outcome that you want. So if really what you're concerned with is getting it out to as many people, at this point, especially because, when you self-publish now, the books look identical. They can look older, they can look better than some university presses. People have access to them, can buy them. I think the benefits of traditional publishing are diminishing. For me, there's still the imprimatur. I mean, that's really what it does for me. And I think they do other things. But if you're having success doing it self-publishing, then I don't know why you would want to change, unless there's some other reason that would be compelling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else have any questions before we end today? Go ahead and press 1 on your phone keypad. Okay, one more here. Hi, Carla. Go ahead.
So I had a textbook idea that I presented to some people at the last TAA conference, actually, and someone within my field, and I was given some names of publishers that he used and he thought would fit. In the meantime, before I contacted them, I did get an email from a publisher asking me, "Hi, I heard about your idea. Can you give me some details?" And I was just wondering what my next step is and what kind of response is expected from me, since I think we're still kind of in the preliminary conversation, or do I need to really create a proposal?
I love this question because it goes to this really human impulse that whenever somebody asks you to do something, you just think that you have to do it or you want to do it. But those kind of messages, no, you don't have to respond other than, thanks for your interest. I'm already talking to people. It's completely up to you. And one of the things that editors do, and it's the fun part of the job, is they stay on top of, who's got good ideas. And as soon as they see something that looks good, they're like, hey, you got a book? And so it means a lot less. There's less commitment on the part of the editor. And that means there's no commitment on your part. And so if it looks like it's the publisher that you might be interested in talking to, then have a conversation. If you feel like the other publishers are going to be more in line with what you want to do, stay with them. But you have complete control here, and you
and
don't.
I can just provide the idea. I can just kind of outline idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and start a conversation. I mean, I think that's the thing, and this is what I find so invigorating talking to editors is that it's a way to get. I mean, maybe I just feel like I need more help than other humans, but it's a way to get help thinking things through. And they're always willing to talk about ideas. So, you know, you can say, here's my idea, and they might say, oh, well, have you considered this? And you might not have considered that, and it might make it even better. You're still not committed to publishing with them. So it's just in these preliminary stages, having more conversations to me is always better.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Well, unfortunately, time is up. I don't want to hold everyone on the call much longer, so we're going to close it out. I do want to say, to follow up on Rachel's mention of TAA's publication grants, TAA members can apply for publication grants from TAA for up to $1,000 to cover expenses incurred in publishing print academic journal articles and books. Which includes academic journal page costs, university press subventions, the cost of preparing artwork, and also grants are also available for expenses incurred as a direct result of research leading to publication of a book or article. If you would like more information about this, you can email me at kim.pollock@taaonline.net. And TAA also has another new grant and may not apply to everyone here that's on the call, but if you're considering writing a textbook and you're going to be contracting with a publisher, TAA also offers a grant of up to $1,000 to cover the cost of that contract negotiation with an attorney. So I encourage you to learn more about these grants. They're made possible by our funding through the Authors Coalition. If any of you have filled out that survey when you joined, you know, it's something that's really great for our members to be able to utilize. So if you want more information about that, you can contact me. Thank you, Rachel, for sharing your expertise with us, and thank you all for participating in today's audio conference. Tips on Getting an Academic Book Published, an interview with Rachel Tour, is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.